If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. You're listening to Sonya Poulton on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the Sonya Poulton Show on today's News Talk. In this hour, 1 week after the groundbreaking CAS review into gender identity, we'll be asking former Olympic swimmer Sharon Davis about what this may mean for women's sports. And we'll find out just who are the biggest beneficiaries of the net green agenda as we attempt to separate fact from fiction with environment editor of the Daily Skeptic, Chris Morrison. And a reminder of the question of the day: what place is there in schools for religion? Now, I want to address an issue that has long been something of a bugbear for me. It is the issue of business improvement districts, aka BIDs. They are strangling small businesses. Now, you may or may not be familiar with them. These are nationwide schemes that frankly act as a type of mafia, and I'm not exaggerating. Bear with me on this. So they work like this, where once businesses, big and small alike, paid business rates to cover the expenses of maintaining the area for the businesses to operate in. Now many towns pay business rates and they also pay BIDs. This is to do the things that the local councils are paid to do, like street cleaning, street signs and events, and BIDs are mandatory. Many small businesses are paying twice in an already struggling economy. There are 335 BIDs in the UK and Ireland involving 132,962 businesses, with a further 61 BIDs in development, more than two decades after the idea was first introduced in 2004. Now, I've interviewed a number of extremely aggrieved people who have been prosecuted for refusing to pay their BIDs. And there is a growing backlash against the scheme, with dozens of cases across the UK of people who have refused to make the mandatory payments and they have ended up in court as a direct result of refusing to do so. Angry business owners argue that BIDs are being created in towns and cities without decent consent. And there are actually questions about funding at a time, for example, when many British councils are going bankrupt, and we are hearing how chief executives are being paid exponential salaries, I mean extraordinary salaries. We are also hearing how small businesses are being trampled all over, and BIDs is one way to do it. A BID is created when it is voted for via a ballot that occurs every 5 years. It's open to all eligible businesses in the area, and opponents say there is no minimum threshold for turnout, and frankly there is often a lack of voters, and a BID can be formed with very little support indeed. People are not happy about this in a time when we are seeing great transfers of wealth from small businesses to big businesses. BIDs are just another problem here. The fact is, we are taxed to hell and back again. We pay taxes for services that are not being provided, and then we are forced to pay again for them. The onslaught on many small businesses is frankly unsustainable. It's almost as if there was a plan to be rid of them from our towns and our cities and to transfer those businesses to shopping entirely online. These are the places where humans congregate in their masses, and little by little the social side of people, one of the very things that make us human, is being eroded as we keep being taxed into oblivion. And on that note, let's find out what's going on with the UK news headlines from Gemma.
It's the stuff.
It's that division
people are talking about,
and that cluelessness that they want to push.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And Gemma is back. Gemma, you've often talked about the issue of, obviously, chief executives at councils being paid huge sums, about the bankruptcy of councils. Are you familiar with BIDs?
Kind of. I mean, I just think I sort of started not laughing funny, you know, just laughing at the ridiculousness of it all. And I've got a very good friend, and he's a very militant kind of person. I met him because of starting my local stand in the park in the midst of the madness, I thought, I'm going to do this. I'm going to start Sound in the Park. And this guy turned up and he's become a really good friend of mine. He's South African and he's a real South African. And I can't say what he actually did say because of language, but I'll paraphrase. He said, stuff the system because the system stuffs you, you know? And this is what this is. This bids thing is the system stuffing the little person, the system stuffing small businesses, the system stuffing for one, you know, he used much more fruity language than me. But this is what this is. This is what this is. An assault on us on every single turn, every single turn. And I heard your excellent interview with Laura Oboli yesterday about the transhuman agenda. Every single way they can come at us for stopping us congregating, connecting, just socializing, even if you don't particularly like the people you're standing next to, for example, in a shopping mall or in a shopping anywhere on a local high street or in queuing in a local business. You know, you might be frustrated with the person in the queue, but you're in the same room. Your human energy fields are interacting with each other. Heart energy fields are interacting with each other. It's a very powerful thing, just being around other people. That's one of the reasons people like going to gigs and to sporting arenas. It's not just to watch the event. It'd be very different if you went on your own, wouldn't it, to a gig or to watch a football match. For a completely different environment. And you don't love everybody at the gig or the football match, but there is an energy there. And that applies to anywhere where human beings get together. So this is something bigger, something deeper. Absolutely. Mm. But I'm with my South African mate, you know, stuff the system, for want of a better word, or the system will stuff you. And there we go.
Yes.
For the day.
Absolutely. And I suspect I would wholly approve of his fruity language regarding this issue, because it is absolutely, it is all those things, isn't it? It isn't just the fact that we're being taxed to oblivion, that people are having to pay twice, but absolutely it is about separating us out, isn't it? Taking us away from the very things that make us human. And being social is a huge part of being human. It really is. And but we're all being encouraged constantly just to keep spending online, aren't we? So they just want to decimate the small high streets and just transfer it, just like they did during COVID, to the big outlets such as Amazon, for example. And just before you go into the UK headlines, I just have to say a big shout out to Matt Hughill, who is a tattoo designer in Twickenham, and he has fought back against bids. And I've interviewed Matt, and Matt has a small shop, and he's just like, it is insane. Basically, they are being asked to do exactly what councils are supposed to do. Clean the streets, right? That is not what people should be paying additional tax to do. Right, sorry, that is my rant of the day out the way. Gemma, tell us what's going on with the UK headlines.
Well, it's really important to rant, Sonia, because you and I both come from the mainstream. And I know if I just said what I'd said in my old job, I'd be fired on the spot. I would have been fired on the spot. And so would you, you know, for saying what? The truth. We would have been fired on the spot. And some people did think I did get fired from my old employer. I didn't. I walked, you know, because I was just so sick of not being able to say what is actually happening in society. So rants are good. Rants are good, especially on a Wednesday, you know, rants are good. That's it. That's my take on it. Anyway, onto some headlines. A couple of the headlines haven't changed since the top of the last hour. We've got David Cameron, the man who will be prime minister again one day, despite his protestations this week to the contrary. He's in Israel. He's touched down and he's in talks of how to stop World War III. It is as simple as that. Inflation is down in the UK, but not down enough. Some financial commentators are saying all eyes are now on the Bank of England to see if they'll bring interest rates down, which will, of course, help the millions of people, you know, trying to service their payments to the big banks and corporations in the form of their mortgages. We'll see if that has an effect in real terms in people's pockets. I heard your interview with Laura Oboli yesterday. It was fantastic, about transhumanism. And this headline caught my eye. I think we should be afraid of this one. The world's most advanced humanoid robot is to be showcased in Scotland in an attempt, and this is the direct quote, to break down barriers between humans and robots and AI. The robot is called Amica, and she, whatever it is, has been bought by the National Robotorium in partnership with the University of Edinburgh, and will go on a tour around schools, capturing young hearts and minds and businesses. It's apparently so lifelike in its face that people really can't tell the difference. And staying in Scotland, old Humza Yousaf is under fire for his new misogynist law, which he's trying to bring in as quickly as possible after coming under fire for his hate crime law, not including women as being protected from hate crime in society. So the misogyny law, he's trying to rush it through. He's been accused of giving trans women double protection. Not only will they be protected against the hate crime law, which is now a law, but he's going to give them double protection by protecting them in the misogyny law. Many, many people have said this is outrageous, including, of course, J.K. Rowling, who's come out yesterday and some really sharp criticism of Humza Yousaf on this one. So I think Sharon Davis might have something to say about that when you discuss the cast report with her in just a few minutes' time.
I think she might. I had missed that, incidentally. So what would you like us to look more closely at, Gemma?
Well, I do think it's interesting about the you know, this misogyny law that Humza Yousaf is now, yesterday, but, you know, stood up in Parliament and said, yeah, we're working on this one as quickly as possible. You know, the easiest thing to do for him would have just been to include women who make up half of the population into the hate crime law. What was going on in their heads when they didn't do that? They said, oh, no, there'll be a separate law for women and it will be under misogyny. Well, trans women are now going to be included. So they have double protection. Are they already, the trans agenda, as some are saying, is the reason why the hate crime law was brought through on the 1st of April. Why did they leave women out? So this is a double contempt in how women are regarded, many are saying. And Humza Yousaf is defending himself by saying, well, if a trans woman walks down the street and the attacker or the people are accosting her verbally, which is what this new law will partially encompass, the perpetrators might not know it's a trans woman. They'll just think it's a real woman, and therefore, you know, there's no definition made in the eyes of the perpetrator. So we have to include trans women. J.K. Rowling has said it shows that he holds women in utter contempt. I am inclined to err on that side of the argument, just because of the sheer ridiculousness of leaving out half of the population when crimes against women and girls are at an epidemic high, and there are many stats to back that up, you know, not just sexual crimes, but, you know, things like sending unsolicited pictures on social media, catcalling, all kinds of crimes against women, not least domestic violence and the amount of women that are murdered by current or former partners every year. That doesn't seem to come under hate. That's where this whole law has fallen down in the first instance. But to be bringing in this new law, and he really is trying to rush it through as quickly as possible, but to include trans women in it seems to be a bit of an own goal when the hate crime law affords trans women so much protection in the first instance. So we will see where this goes. It's a big debate. And of course, the law itself, 7,000 complaints within the first week since it was launched on April the 1st, but only 240 police are saying actually deem what is constituting a real hate crime, and lots of police time and effort wasted on paperwork in the meantime.
Oh, so where do I even begin to start with that, Gemma? So many questions. I mean, first of all, clearly women were an afterthought in this, right? And I think he's just sort of running to catch up because it sort of sparked something of a backlash of people saying, oh, where are women in this? But the other thing, of course, which is interesting, so they are attempting to build a legal scenario on the back of a legal fiction, because obviously in reality, no man can become a woman and no woman can become a man. So they're really messing with law here, aren't they, in so many respects? And this feels very duplicitous. It feels as if this is all about trickery, smoke and mirrors. He's not really doing very well, is he? And I wonder what's happening with him, because I'd heard that he'd had a lot of reports to the police himself for his, you know, whites are everywhere in authority speech. Do you know anything about that?
I do know that yesterday he did say that the hate law had been used and manipulated by bad faith actors who were being vexatious. And I think that was a direct reference to the amount of complaints that people had made about that speech, which was, what, a couple of years, 3 years ago now, maybe, which he made about how there were so many people who are white in positions of power in Scotland. Well, it's an overwhelmingly white country. So percentage-wise, that might be reflective of the makeup of the country. Well, that speech has been reported as hate speech. There are no stats on how many of the 7,000 complaints were about that. But he was jumping up and down yesterday and saying, well, people are using it for their own purposes and being vindictive and bad faith actors, vexatious. Oh, you know, so he was definitely animated about some of the complaints that have been made. Let's put it that way. But he didn't make direct reference to his own speech. I think he's probably hoping that he doesn't want actually to draw any more attention to that speech, which, when you look at it out of context, possibly in the terms of the hate crime law, you could say, well, if anyone else was saying that, that would be reported. So just because you did it 3 years ago and it was in maybe a wider context, does it really matter? Those comments, if made now, come under your new law, Yousaf. You know, it's as simple as Yousaf. It's as simple as that. So we'll see where we go from here. But it was a massive own goal just not to put women in the original law. I think they're seeing that now. This misogyny law will be brought in as quickly as they can muster it and under the legal process. Too little, too late, very possibly indeed. And the BBC in Scotland as well has come under fire for not accurately reporting the cast review last week. Accusations of bias from the women's group Women of Scotland and accusations accusations of propaganda from the Scottish arm of the BBC for not reflecting the issue properly. So then, again, that might be something else that Sharon Davis and you can drill down on.
Well, Mrs. Pirate in the comments says men and women face have more protections under law than women. Imagine wearing blackface and being more protected than black people in 2024. And one would think that this is something out of a sort of Black Mirror episode in some respects, but no, that is exactly where we are right now. And Shug, who is a Scotsman, is deeply concerned, says Scotland is a basket case now. It really is. They're insulting the creator. And Brett says in relation to Gemma and I that we are indeed the dynamic duo. Thank you, Brett.
We greatly appreciate that.
Thank you, Gemma. Thank you so much. And we will see you tomorrow. We will be right back.
TNT's Alex Zaharoff-Royd.
They need to expand the number of places and countries that can make ARM-powered processors. And Intel has actually made chips designed with ARM designs for years. This deal will give Intel's foundries, two of which are being built in the US at a cost of $20 billion, more chips to make. Now, TSMC has received $6.6 billion from the Biden administration towards its much-delayed 3 and 4 nanometer chip foundries in Arizona. So while we went from a drought of chips during the pandemic, the second half of this decade should see even more chips being manufactured than ever before, which the world will need considering the AI boom currently underway will need ever more computing power to satisfy the ever-growing demand.
Talkin' Tech with Alex Zaharoff-Royd on today's News Talk. TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
So many people who had no history of heart illnesses have got it now, or blood clotting after the COVID-19 vaccination. Punish those who hurt people with COVID madness, lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
And welcome back to the Sonia Poulton Show on today's News Talk. Now, this past week has seen a huge milestone for the gender ideology movement in the UK with the publishing of the long-awaited CAS review. But as we continue to digest its findings, what will it mean for women's sports as one example? Joining me now to discuss this and many other issues around the issue of gender is probably our most decorated British female sports star. She's been consistently outspoken on this matter. She is, of course, former Olympic swimmer Sharon Davis. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning. How are you? Lovely to see you again. It's been a while since we chatted.
Indeed. We were just saying, weren't we, in the break that I came to your house, I interviewed you for my transgender documentary. Sharon, you have been fighting the good fight. You were out there before other sports voices, and kudos to you. And it is because of pushback from high profile people like yourself that I believe that the CAS review happened at all. What are your thoughts about it?
I'm just sad it's taken so long for this information to actually make its way to the public arena, because as you and I know, this information is not new. You know, we've known for an extremely long time that the large numbers of young people, particularly girls, come from an autistic background, a sexual abuse background, you know, foster homes. These kids are incredibly vulnerable and looking to fit in. And they've almost been hijacked, and there's been so much irreparable damage that's been done to their young psyche, but their young bodies. I mean, they've been turned into patients for the rest of their lives. And And this, I just think, is one of the historical medical scandals which we're going to, you know, it's going to unfold over the next 10, 20 years and just progressively get worse until people realise how horrendous it really is.
And I think we will look back on this period, won't we, and see how dark it was. You and I have discussed this at length, the fact that if children had just been left alone, chances are they would desist from this idea that they were born in the wrong body.
Yeah, and it's predominantly young gay kids as well, you know, and we suppose have made huge progress in this area. You know, I loathe the idea that we're going back to stereotypes as well. You know, this we should be in a world in 2024 where we can accept feminine males and masculine females, and people can be individual and unique and wear whatever they like and call themselves whatever they like. But the reality of biological sex is not going to go, you're not going to be able to wish it away, you know. So I think it's a shame that we're lying to young people. There is a very dark side to it, which, again, I think will eventually come out. And again, if you've been wrapped involved in this for a long time, you're very aware of that. And that is still not making its way in the public arena, but it will. And those forces have been pushing, you know, along with pharmaceutical, along with companies that are making tremendous amounts of money out of this, which it's always follow the money, isn't it, in lots of cases. You know, I have friends that, you know, have children, and I knew they were gay when they were young, and they've been transitioned. And they're now, you know, one particular family, they have two boys. They were castrated before they were 17 years old, and they will never have fulfilling sex lives. They will find it incredibly difficult to find partners, and they will be clinical medical patients for the rest of their lives. And it just horrifies me. It really does.
Which is even more important why you've been prepared to speak up. And it's not been easy, has it? We've seen what's happened with J.K. Rowling, but you've also suffered as a consequence of being prepared to speak out about this. What have you been through? What has been the sort of response to you putting your head above the parapet?
Cancel culture absolutely exists. You know, these trans activists will ring all the people that you work with, whether that's agencies, whether that's schools, whether that's charities, and they will just make your life absolute hell. And then they abuse you, which is fine. I can live with that because that was the decision I made. But then they make threats to your children and to your families. You know, it's been extraordinary. I mean, so you lose a lot of money, but I have a very particular history, I suppose, with the East German era, which went on for 20 years, where the IOC did absolutely nothing to stop the old East German state giving steroids and testosterone to their young girls with massive long-term side effects. Many of them died so that they could win medals. And I saw firsthand what these drugs did to young people. But for 20 years, nobody spoke out to try and stop young females from not being able to win the awards that they should have done. And I just could not sit back and watch that happen to a whole nother generation of young females. A different process, but the same end result. You know, testosterone was there naturally instead of illegally and creating an unfair platform. And that just wasn't right. And so none of the science supported the position that the IOC took in 2015, not a single piece of science. And I was just astonished that they were making this mistake all over again. And they're still determinedly sticking to their agenda, you know, and it's just heartbreaking when women have such a small part of the cake. We have 4% of the mainstream airtime on sport. We have 2% of the sponsorship dollar. 1,000 women in the UK earn their living. 11,000 men earn their living from sport. And that 11,000 men will earn colossally more than those 1,000 women. And most of those 1,000 women are lottery funded. So, you know, we have this tiny, tiny piece of the cake. Mm. And now we're being told we don't matter. We don't even deserve fair sports. And then if we do deserve it, we only deserve it at elite level. The rest of us don't deserve it. So the whole thing is just mad. And if people had said this was going to happen 20 years ago, people would have laughed at you. But here we are.
And the thing is that your voice is particularly important because you have, as you say, you have firsthand experience. You saw what happened. You lost out as a direct result of a cheating, right?
Yes. I mean, it was cheating. It was taking an illegal substance. You know, I don't have a problem with the particular individual because they had very little choice in this. They were also victims. And as I've mentioned, you know, they suffered medically and many have died. But the IOC were the ones in the position of authority and power. They could have done something about it. They could have stopped it, and they didn't. They're an incredibly misogynistic, dinosaur, old-fashioned, controlling, greedy organization. And we need a massive expose the way that FIFA had to be exposed a few years ago with the IOC. And we need a lot more power going back, you know, to the athletes. We need more transparency. And we need the athletes to be central to their whole organization, where it's not. You know, Lucerne and the IOC are central, and how much money they can make. And you know, and the percentage of money that goes back from the billions that they raise is in single figures to the athletes.
We will go to some news headlines. We'll be right back with National Treasure, Sharon Davis. See
you. I have some even more exciting news.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Australia's unveiled a new national defence strategy with a greater focus on the Pacific as tensions rise with China. Israel's brutality against Palestinians in Gaza is once again in the spotlight after a new mass grave was uncovered at the Al-Shifa hospital. And the BBC has come under fire after one of its radio hosts flipped the script and took aim at the West for refusing to hold Israel accountable for the mounting civilian death toll.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
We are here talking with Superwoman Sharon Davis. Yes, I'm a fan, and unashamedly so, frankly, because I know what it takes to be a public figure and put your head above the parapet, Sharon, and you have been absolutely tremendously brilliant, and I have absolute respect for what you've been prepared to do. So thank you, because you've not just been standing up for women and girls, but you've been standing up against this totalitarian madness. And that is absolutely brilliant. So let us talk about trans-identified males in women's sports. It's been very confusing. There are some sports where this is no longer allowed, right? But the front page of the Daily Mail yesterday was about a further call for the removal of males from women's sports. What's actually going on at the moment?
Yeah, so that was the DCMS. That was Lucy Fraser, Minister, who I met with last week. I've met many times with many ministers, you know, down in Parliament, particularly Kenny Badenoch, who's always been very much on side, is you know, as an equality minister. This was about trying to get them to stop just giving guidance, which is what they've been doing now for nearly 4 years, that you can't have inclusion of trans-identifying males and fair sport for women. And so that sports organisations must prioritise fairness and safety, which they've not been doing. So what I've been trying to lobby government to do is to remove Sport England funding from any organisation that's still deliberately implementing sex discrimination. And there's no doubt about it, this is sex discrimination. We are discriminating against biological females in a category of sport that was created solely for them to give them equality in the world of sport, which, as I mentioned earlier, we don't have. We have this tiny piece of the cake anyway. But to give us some sort of equality and to give us opportunities. And so now we're being told we have to move over for very mediocre male athletes. And so I feel outraged by the fact we can't use the science. So we know that at Olympic level, there's a difference of between 10 and 30%. So 30% being the more explosive events like weightlifting and distance running probably being the least at about 10%. In swimming, we're around 11%. Now, that's absolutely massive when we win, you know, Olympic medals by hundredths of a second. And here's a really interesting stat I heard yesterday. I have lots of these because I like dealing in facts. That's what I always like to deal in. But Flo Jo, who still holds the world record for the women's 100, and there's a big question mark over whether that was a particularly clean 100 metres even then, there's 7,000 men that run faster than that. So, you know, it's we're taking spots, places in teams, scholarships, medals, opportunities, and the world of sport now is a career. So if you're successful in sport, this will launch you for the rest of your life into, you know, so many opportunities, into a workplace, whether that's coaching, whether that's working on television as a pundit, you know, all sorts of different opportunities that will come from that profile. And that's being removed from young girls. And one of the worst areas, and one of the areas that I find I get the most upset about, funnily enough, is youngsters, young girls. So I will have parents, you know, during the season of sports days, ringing me up and sending me emails saying, my little girl's come home from sports day at her primary school. The school decided to be inclusive, so they've run co-ed races and not little girl has won a race all day. So what are we telling our 11-year-old girls, you know, or our 8-year-old girls? We're just telling them they're not worthy of the opportunities.
And that is the problem. It is very chilling, isn't it? Because it is, it literally is, it's so demoralizing. And what concerns me, Sharon, and you know this to be true, I mean, your stats are brilliant and I do love them. But the fact is, a lot of very mediocre males who cannot compete against other males are seeing this as an opportunity to finally be a winner, right? That is a statement.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as I mentioned, none of the science supports this. So we've got 19 peer-reviewed studies in the world and not a single one of them shows that we can remove male puberty advantage. And there are things like cue angle, which is the angle between the hips and your knees. You know, and obviously as a woman, you're going to have a different, you're going to have a wider hip because you're giving birth. So therefore, that's quite, you know, quite larger. And in football, for example, women get six times as many ACL knee injuries because of this cue angle. If you sit on a bike, it means that you can put more power into your legs. If you're taking a stride on the track, you know, it puts more power. So all of these things can't be changed by reducing testosterone. And once anyone's gone through male puberty, the whole reducing testosterone thing is a total red herring. And none of it's checked anyway. So whether an organization says we're going to have to reduce it to 10 nanomoles or 5 nanomoles, and the average woman is under 1 nanomole, okay? So you're still saying to these men that they can have 10 times as much or 5 times as much testosterone in their system, and testosterone is a banned drug from the WADA testing list. It's just ridiculous. None of it is even properly marshaled or checked. You know, and we all know how easy it is to reduce testosterone because that's exactly what the East Germans did. They removed it from their system 48 hours before they left East Germany. They sweat it out of them. And then they went to the Olympics and they tested negative. So it's so bogus. It's untrue. I think the only answer to this problem is to say, right, we're going to rebrand as it was always intended. But now we just need to be extremely clear about this. A female category, which is open to biological females, 51% of the world's population. And we're going to have an open and fully inclusive category where anyone can take part. And that also would include, you know, transgender men, which are biological females on testosterone, who at the moment no one ever cares about because, of course, they're women, basically. So nobody does care about them. Who can't compete in the women's category because they're taking illegal substances, who have nowhere to compete. So by creating an open category, everyone has someone to be able to compete and to race. And that is true inclusivity, but at the same time, offering fair opportunities, you know, to half the world.
And you know as well as I do that that will be rejected because a great deal of this is about validation, isn't it? It's about men being validated as women. And so that which I think is absolutely right. Great solution that you're coming up with. But we both know it will be rejected on those grounds. Sharon, do you have days, even after all these years of pushback, and you must have been pushing back now for about 5-6 years at least.
Oh, no, way more than that. Since 2015, so nearly 10 years.
Wonderful. Go you. Absolutely. But do you still have days, because I do, when I think I cannot believe that this was all allowed to take root, the just absolute totalitarian madness that is going on here?
Yeah, it's been the no debate, though. It's been a very clever strategy, you know, and you have to give full credit to, you know, to certain departments. This is not right. Most LGBT people, I've met many transgender people and certainly many gay people who very much want to disassociate themselves from this, yes. You know, and that's the problem. Everyone's been tarred with the same brush, and that's just not true. And it's the same with people that are pushing back. You know, I don't want to exclude anyone from sport. I want everyone to do sport. Sport's been my life, but I just want sport to be fair and to be safe, you know, for young girls. So it is frustrating, but they've been very clever to put themselves into positions of power, you know, through diversity and equality officers, sitting in offices, shaming everybody into doing things which actually most of them disagree with. But everyone has been too frightened to put their head above the parapet and say and do the right thing. And so they've had this no debate strategy for an incredibly long time, which we've had to break through. And now I feel at least with the CAST report, we're doing that. You mentioned, you know, sports around the world that are doing the right thing. So World Rugby was one of the first, World Aquatics, which I'm very proud of, athletics, netball, World Cricket, you know, so World Cycling. So more and more sports are doing the right thing, but it's been like pulling teeth to actually get them to, you know, to reverse on something they should never have done in the first place without any scientific basis to do it. So, but we still have a lot of combat sports. We still have the FA. I mean, one of our biggest problems in the UK is the FA. There's over 50 trans-identifying males in the female game. And we know that girls are dropping out. You know, so we already have a big problem. Girls drop out at twice the rate of boys. And yet we have a massive problem now with girls dropping out because they just don't feel like anyone's paying any attention to them or anybody's supporting them. So boys have recovered to pre-COVID figures with regards to sport, and girls still have not. And now we're also getting the problem where certain people are trying to suggest that even data should be collected based on gender choice, not on biological sex. So then the actual statistics are being skewed, so we can't even prove in certain places that women are dropping out. So it's dire. You know, we've got to keep pushing back. We've got to keep putting sunlight on this so that people can see the rationale. We can be fair, we can be kind, but we need to be honest.
I mean, you're absolutely right. Sunlight is essential. Look what they did with Parkrun recently. Rather than admit that men were, you know, running with women, they decided to get rid of all the records completely. Yeah. It's just extraordinary. Sharon, none of
and
this
And they received £5 million from government to increase now, participation. So that is
exactly what I was just going to say. That's exactly what I was going to say. None of this could have happened without the authorities assisting it. Many politicians got behind this, right? We've been sold this idea that transgenderism is basically a very vulnerable person weeping in the corner of the room. It's a grassroots situation. Now we know it isn't at all. Follow the money. It's top down, isn't it? Grassroots are people who have been pushing back against it. But politicians have enabled this, haven't they?
Politicians in lots of instances have been too cowardly to do the right thing. You know, they've had this information for a very long time and they've just sat on it. I've been pushing to try and get them to clarify the Equality Act because sex is a protected characteristic. And at the moment, there's no protection for biological sex. It's just not happening. So, you know, it was always intended to mean biological sex when it was written in 2010. Everybody absolutely knows that, but it's been skewed. So we need to clarify that and make sure that people are aware. And then we have, you know, great discrimination opportunities. We can go to court, you know, if we really have to. At the moment, it's a bit grey. So the government keeps giving guidance, but they don't actually enforce it. And that's the problem we've got. So that's why I was trying to speak to Lucy Fraser. I'm very pleased to see the big piece in the Mail yesterday on the front page. However, going back to these organisations and giving them more guidance isn't going to do anything about it. They need to remove the Sport England funding from organisations who are deliberately discriminating against females. And it needs to be across the board. You know, we can't just protect elite athletes. We have to protect grassroots. We have to protect school kit girls. You know, we have to protect, there is no girl that's not worthy. You can't turn around and say an elite female is worthy and non-elite female is not worthy. 1,000 women in this country are classed as elite. In 18 million women do sports. So you can't have pretty much 18 million women that aren't worthy. You know, it's got to, and where do the elite athletes come from if they don't come from grassroots and pathways?
I mean, this is just good common sense. We need to get you in office, lady. I mean, there's no doubt about it because everybody, we've all lost faith in our politicians. Let's be frank. We all have. And so I it would be absolutely remiss of me to let you go before I asked you what you thought about Hamza Yousaf in Scotland as an attachment. Oh. Like he seems to have forgotten women in his hate crime bill, right? So now as an add-on, he's going to do this misogyny law. And of course, he says that women will be protected. What he says is anyone affected by misogyny. So that, of course, includes trans-identified males. What do you think about that, Sharon?
Well, I can only tell you from personal experience, and that's why I try to speak, because, you know, I know that's 100% true. But the worst misogyny that I have had, and I have had some extremely terrible misogyny, has come from trans-identifying males. Yeah. So because, you know, you won't kowtow to what they're telling you you have to do, believe, say. So it's a ridiculous state of affairs. The whole point of misogyny is to protect, you know, biological females from biological males' aggression. And this is so, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's ridiculous. And hopefully there'll be as much pushback as there was against his hate bill, you know, which showed how ridiculous it was as well. And I'm just very sad for the people of Scotland, you know, because all of this money has been spent. They have one trick pony, which is independence, which is absolutely fine. But they have, you know, their record shows that they've reduced education, they've got bigger waiting lists, they've got bigger crime. And so the people of Scotland have just lost out. And so I hope, when election time comes around that they speak with their vote.
Thank you so much for joining us. Before you go, let me read a couple of comments. John says, I'm a gay man, and this has made me not want anything to do with the Rainbow Brigade. You become something of a pariah in my position. They hate gay people who don't subscribe to the lunacy. And Hope, Love and Peace says, Sharon has been brilliant for keeping us in the news. And so say all of us. And at TNT, we say Sharon for office. Sharon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you to you. And I feel so sorry for those people. They have my support, and I will keep fighting for everybody.
You're amazing, everybody. This has been the incredible Sharon Davis. We'll be right back.
From weather and traffic reports
to news of political developments,
we turn to journalists for the information we need to live our daily lives.
Journalists around the world provide the news that is essential for democracy,
for personal freedom, and for safety and stability.
Yet their ability to report freely and safely is under attack like never before.
So many journalists are paying with their lives.
They face exponential risks, and they've already paid a heavy toll.
Death threats, online harassment, and physical attacks
are becoming a daily experience of journalists in all countries.
We just want people to be safe, to be able to get our readers the information that they need to make informed decisions.
They checked my phone and realized that it was Pegasus. I feel myself like I'm naked at the street.
These charges were politicized from the start.
Facts win. Truth wins. Justice wins.
C'est énorme pour moi d'être là, d'être libre, surtout que je ne m'y attendais pas du tout.
Stand with a free press.
Stand with journalists whose reporting won't be silenced.
Press freedom is your freedom.
When the world's endangered animals need help most, when their lives are at greatest risk, when they would otherwise be lost, the International Fund for Animal Welfare is there, taking action to rescue the animals we love, to protect them and their threatened natural habitats. See how you can help animals and people thrive together at joinifall.org.
You're listening to Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk, TNT.
Now, who are the real beneficiaries of the green agenda? One man who thinks he knows is environment editor of the Daily Skeptic, Chris Morrison. He joins me now to discuss that and other matters when it comes to the climate and beyond. Good morning, Chris. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, yeah. Lovely to be here again, yeah.
Really brilliant. Read two of your articles, and I love it, Chris, because you just constantly break myths around the whole net zero green agenda, and that's more of what we want, really. What specific evidence did you find that challenges this commonly held belief that plastic bags are harmful to the environment?
Well, plastic bags aren't harmful to the environment. They're only harmful if you dispose of them badly. Plastic, the war on plastic has been going now for 10, 15 years. The real problem is a problem of waste management. If you don't want plastic in the oceans, don't put it there in the first place. And don't be hypocritical as a rich country and think that you can send in ships to poor countries who then dump it in rivers out of sight and cure the problem. Plastic is easily disposed of. It can be used to burn power stations, all sorts of uses. What we reported on was three eminent scientists from Sheffield University and Cambridge. And they did a study that looked at the effect of using substitutes to plastic. Plastic is the great invention of the 20th century. It's everywhere. It's a wonderful invention. It's lightweight, durable, all these things. So they looked at the alternatives, and they found that they looked at set out of 15 out of 16 applications that the amount of carbon emissions was between 10 and 90% higher for all the alternatives. And the biggest one, of course, is plastic bags. plastic bags. The nearest alternative is things like paper. It causes four times more the emission of greenhouse gases. Now, if greenhouse gases are your thing, I personally don't have a problem with green carbon dioxide. It's the gas of life. We probably need a little bit more in the atmosphere. But if it is your thing, and of course it drives the whole process of the collectivization being planned on global populations by net zero, then you should be using more plastic, not less, because it's a lot more beneficial to the environment.
Chris, that completely turns all received wisdom on its head. We were told a few years back, certainly in the UK, that plastic bags are so bad that shops are now going to have to charge you a minimum of 10 pence to have one in order to be able to reduce them. So where did that all come from?
Well, it's difficult to say where the war on plastic came. They don't like plastic because it's a hydrocarbon, and it's a byproduct of oil and gas production and exploration. So obviously, plastic bad, everything else good. The more you look at the net zero, everything they suggest, windmills, which were very popular at the time of Henry II, I think he reigned from 1150 to about 1199. The idea that these things which chomp up millions of bats, they kill eagles, they on offshore, they're now killing the whales, they're destroying the oceans and turning them into industrial parks. We had an article recently where even the Brothers Grimm, forests of Germany, where the fairy tales of Cinderella were set, are being torn up in order to produce roads so that they can produce wind turbines. All of these things that they suggest, electric cars again, there aren't enough children in the Congo to mine all the cobalt.
Right.
You need to turn over vast quantities of the crust of the earth to do them. They weigh much more, so they chomp up bridges and roads. They are danger to if you're on any car ferry, they explode, they're impossible to put out or very difficult to put out. All of these alternatives, whether it be plastic, cars, windmills, they're all inferior technologies. And the reason we had more superior technologies in the past is because they were better. But if you go down a political agenda, if you're determined to collectivize the world, you're determined to make us poor, then you have to nudge people to use these inferior technologies.
You talk about the green agenda, and we often talk on TNT, obviously, about the UN Sustainable Development Goals 2030. Is everything that we see to do with the UN 2030?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing that came from it goes back to the 1990s. I wouldn't say that there's a book out there where they're planning it. I think I've always argued that it's more a confluence of influence. It's a confluence going back 100 years of environmentalism, of a lack of a religion in the West now. We have Marxism failed with the fall of the Soviet Union. We have all of these left-wing agendas all conveniently coming into a nice little agenda where they do what they usually want to do, which is control human populations with a centralized control. So I think it's rather than look at a sort of a book that's there. Having said that, this particular agenda is undoubtedly being followed by many of the elites in society, and much of it has been funded, of course, by a very, very few number of billionaires. People will be surprised to know how people are actually funding it and how wealthy they are. I mean, if you look at the Labour Party and the Conservative Party, political parties in this country, they receive £40 million, £50 million a year to actually run a political party that could well be a government. Michael Bloomberg gives more than that to the C40 group. Michael Bloomberg gave $1 billion to groups in the United States in order to tell them to go and work to cut out oil and gas from industrial society. The amount of money is staggering. And I think you're going to perhaps come on to another article about the ECHR judgment. We think of those little old ladies, all sort of, worried about the sun in their icy mountain redoubt of Switzerland. And instead of doing the sensible thing, which is to buy, factor 50 and put a bit more of that on, they have got the government to overturn the popular will of the Swiss people expressed in a referendum and pull back the which itself rode back on some of the net zero craziness. And who was funding this? It wasn't little old ladies. They didn't dip into their sort of Swiss wallets. It was Greenpeace, which, of course, as we know, is a massive NGO, which takes money from all sorts of wealthy donors around the world, and an operation called Climate Earth. Client Earth is one of these new lawfare operations that have suddenly sprung up. They provide a lot of the legal advice in order for the court to come to their idiotic decision. And Climate Earth is backed by billionaires. It's backed by Sir Christopher Holm, who not only backs lawfare outfits, he also backs eco-vandals like Extinction Rebellion. All the usual suspects. Michael Bloomberg, of course. And we never find anything where Michael Bloomberg's money isn't being inserted into the mix. All of these operations are funding these particular outfits that are overturning, as we saw in the ECHR judgment, overturning the will of the voters.
That's extraordinary, and it's so ironic, isn't it? Because obviously we're sort of force-fed this idea that the green agenda is there to help us. It's all about being clean, but it's really some really shoddy, dirty business that appears to be going on. And it honestly reaches the point, Chris, when I have to wonder whether, in relation to you writing about green billionaires, whether there are actually any institutions left that we can have any trust in.
Well, there are very few that haven't been haven't had green billionaire money. Political parties. The Conservative Party has half the backbenchers in the ruling British Conservative Party belong to an organisation that supports net zero, that's funded by green billionaires. The media, you might have come across this covering Climate Now, which supplies free stories for 500, 600 media outlets around the world. These are all stories catastrophizing the weather and the climate, all backed by green money. We're in schools, they're in schools with programs and textbooks, all funded by green money. Everywhere you look, politics, in science, the amount of money that goes into science, it certainly doesn't go into science to sort of, you know, to find out anything other than the fact that CO2 is this devil gas and that we need to cut down on it and all this stuff they come up with. All this fake science, all this dodgy science, all this science based on impacts of tipping points that don't exist, and the climate models that produce all the data that is simply just an opinion and it's just made up, all funded by green money. Nothing happens. There are no, I would argue, there are no grassroots green operations in existence.
Nobody.
All these things that you look at, all the support for this, are all funded by huge amounts of this green money.
Same old story, Chris. Thank goodness you're out there doing what you do. But some days, don't you just think, why am I an environment editor in this insane world?
Yes. Well, luckily, I'm a sort of a half full kind of guy. I mean, I'm a journalist of 40 years or so on and off, and the wickedness of the world and its intrigues, I think you just got to, you know, really sort of, you know, find it quite amusing, if anything. I mean, of course, it's appalling. I mean, what's going on is dreadful, and it's happening in plain sight. But you have to sort of say, I don't think for one moment that net zero is going to go anywhere near being accepted by populations. I always say, in the United Kingdom, come the first blackout, people will all be, you mean my electricity? Oh, you mean my car? Oh, you mean my state? Oh, I didn't think it applied to me. and you're starting to see that around Europe. You're starting to see this craziness affecting people directly. And once that happens, they will reject it en masse, because net zero is insanity on sticks. It will lead, and I believe this. It's an opinion, so I can't say I don't believe it. I believe that it will lead to the death of millions and billions of people, because if you remove the one reliable source of energy that props up, that promotes our industrial society, you are back to a very, very dark, horrible place. You're back to medieval times. You're back to democracy will be the first things that go, because, of course, people would fight over resources. You're back to, fossil hydrocarbons are in everything, medicine, heating, everything. You remove that from the mix and you take people back to the dark ages. And so I don't think that will happen. I think that as soon as people realize the effects of what is being planned by these insane people, and it is insanity. It's like an insanity has come across, you know, large parts of the world, as it does, you know, why I'm a cheerful chap, really. You know, I'm an historian as well. It has happened many, many times in the past, and it often corrects itself. Sometimes it doesn't correct itself unless there's a lot of hardship, and one must hope that the hardship will not happen in this case, that we live in democratic societies, and that this insanity will be rejected. But who knows? Who knows?
We need to take that as a warning from you. I trust what you're saying. This is Chris Morrison, and Chris has proven exactly why today's News Talk is here. And that is, we need people who are prepared to unpack official narratives, no matter how well-funded they are. This, everybody, is Chris Morrison. He's a former financial journalist and many other things, and a publisher. But thank goodness for all of us, he is now an environment editor at the Daily Skeptic. Thank you so much, Chris. Have a wonderful Wednesday. Truly appreciate you joining us today on today's News Talk. And that just about brings us to the end of our show. It's been a jam-packed show, hasn't it? Thank you to everybody who has contributed to our show, everybody who works behind the scenes, making it what it is. All of you, we would be nothing and nowhere and no one without your contributions. And we greatly, greatly appreciate it. I'm just going to have a quick look because I see that I've got 1 minute, 1 minute to play with, which is fantastic in broadcasting. And I just want to see if I can pick up any final comments and see what's going on here. Let the Pied Pipers take their children underground. I'm not dancing to their tune. I'm playing my own, says Just a Bloke. And Max Bliss says the post-democratic era is UN Agenda 21. And on that note, thank you all, everybody. Have a fantastic Wednesday. We will see you tomorrow. Stick around. David Curtin is coming up, and take excellent care of yourself.